Morning, everyone, and welcome to our IHCA MCO monthly call sponsored by Right Dose Pharmacy. Right Dose has been a great sponsor of the association for several years, and we continue and appreciate their support of our calls for the 2022 year. Also, thanks to Amerigroup and Amerigroup team members for joining us on our call every month at 11:30. And so we want to give them a shout out for taking the time and joining us and answering some of the questions that you all may have. And so I'll do my update here. Like John mentioned, we'll go to the pre-submitted questions and then we'll look into the chat and see what we have time to be able to answer through there. So that's kind of the run of show for this call here. I like to go through the informational letters that have been released. I do this on both calls. Obviously, if you're on the last one, you've heard my spiel here, but the first one came out on March 23rd. It's info letter 2326, and it's related to the day weighted case mix index calculation. And so this is for nursing facilities. And what we're trying to do here, what the department isn't identifying out here for providers is the change that's going to be occurring for case mix calculation. And so currently providers are reimbursed based on the acuity of the residents in the facility as of the last date of the quarter. And so what this modification does is it changes that point in time to a day weighted calculation. So it utilizes every single day of the quarter, creates averages based on the acuity of the residents that are in the facility, and then it puts a focus on every day rather than a single point in time. And so it's really just a more accurate representation of the case mix that's in the facility. I think when we went to point in time back in like 2000 or 2001 or something like that, it was the right choice at the time. I think now that the capabilities have increased and you know obviously the use of Excel and spreadsheets has increased, that is a lot more easily used to determine and make some of these changes. And so that's a big piece of this is the change in that calculation method for nursing facility case mix. Another piece of that is a change to a semi-annual rate adjustment, which would go into a place 7-1 of 23. And so this is changing from the quarterly to the semi-annual rates. It's obviously cutting the number of rate changes in half, which is a positive change, especially it's less numbers and less rates that need to be updated in MCO systems, which is helpful as far as claims processing, accuracy of claims processing. So this would be helpful from that perspective too, while still making sure that we're adjusting for case mix, because there's obviously importance in that and costs that are associated with higher case mix and less costs that are associated with lower case mix. And so being able to have that reflected upon future rates is still important, and is why we wanted to make sure that was still done at least semi-annually. And then the last piece of that info letter, it is a piece about turning in cost reports and issuing rates for those providers. And so what it's basically saying is the earlier you turn in cost reports, the earlier you'll be notified of your future rate. And so obviously a critical mass of cost reports would still need to be received before a rate can be determined, because they'll need to use a large number of cost reports to be able to determine costs for the sector. But it's kind of on a, as it comes in, we'll send it out as long as we have that critical mass. And so you should, as part of this, be able to receive your cost reports sooner, or your rates sooner if your cost reports were submitted sooner. It's just kind of an enticement to maybe turn them in prior to the couple weeks ahead of the deadline, if at all possible. And so that's kind of the thought behind that one. I have a couple other info letters, and these two next two are actually on the same topic. It's in regards to the American Rescue Plan Act, the HCBS recruitment and retention grants. And I know that's part of the question, the first question in our pre-submitted. And so I'll just kind of briefly talk about it here. And then if there's anything that AmeriGroup maybe wants to add to that, you can jump in here and then we can obviously bypass the question later on. But this is grant funds are for the recruitment and retention efforts of your employees. If you are a CDAC provider, which it's more categories than that, but as for the purposes of this group, chances are you would be able to receive this if you are a CDAC provider. There are several other provider types, most of which are not members of IHCA, but it's to be used for your recruitment of new employees if you have open positions, and it's supposed to be used for the retention of your current employees for the number of individuals that you have working for you. It's a great opportunity. I think it's a pretty good chunk of funds being received, and it just basically is asking you to use it for those two purposes. And so those funds were distributed towards, I want to say last week. They came through the MCOs. They were partnered in making sure that these funds were distributed to providers. And so just making sure that if you did apply in round one, that you are able to, or you have received those funds. The second piece is round two, which was opened up on March 24th through info letter 2329. And providers are able, if you did not apply for the grant the first time around, you are able to apply now through Friday, April 22nd. Again, it's the same provider groups that are eligible for this. Most would be agency CDAC providers, at least from our groups here. And again, April 22nd is the due date for that. The info letter and the grant, within the info letter is the grant application. There's a link to it. So I would encourage you to do that if it's something you haven't completed yet. Again, that's IL 2329 with the link to the grant at the bottom of the page. So I would encourage any application of that. Obviously, workforce is a major issue for everyone, not even just healthcare, but this is a way to help retain the critical employees that you have and maybe help to try to recruit some additional ones. So mm-hmm. I'll pause here and see if John or anyone from AmeriGroup has anything they want to add to that.
Yeah, I think you covered it really well. You know, it's defined by how the federal dollars came down in terms of the provider type with the with the Iowa tailoring to our HCBS programs and definitions. And I know Megan, you've been working with Dennis on this a little bit. Do you have anything that you wanted to elaborate on with regard to the recruitment and retention bonuses?
Just if you have any questions with the amount or anything that you receive from AmeriGroup, just reach out to your rep and we can help. There have been a couple that we had to take a look at. So if anyone has questions, just reach out to your rep. But that was all. Otherwise, it was covered.
One thing I think I would maybe have a question on, I suppose, is I don't know what the methodology was for determining if it was paid through Iowa TotalCare or if it was paid through AmeriGroup. Is there one, or is it just kind of half went through AmeriGroup and half went through Iowa TotalCare? Do you know?
I don't know, but I was just told by my director that we got like the first third of the alphabet, and then IME took some and ITC took some, but I don't know the reasoning for it.
No, that works then. Okay. And then I will say that I think the payment, if you received it from AmeriGroup, might have shown the name Anthem. And so if you're not familiar with that, it likely indicated Anthem. And so that would be through AmeriGroup then. Is that fair or accurate as the parent company? At least that's what I heard from at least one provider. So,
Yeah, thanks for that clarification. That's our parent company. And these are total pass-through payments. It's, you know, so based on the instructions that IME gave to us, and then we know that we're processing them.
Awesome. I will pause here before we go into questions. And I know, John, you mentioned that you had some updates and comments that you wanted to make. So I'll let you go there.
Yeah, just and very briefly, housekeeping detail. We do have a few additional individuals on from Amerigroup. Danielle has joined us this morning. Donna lost connection, and I think she's trying to get back in. And Jessica, Sheree, Dawn have joined as well. So we've got a number of our provider experience reps. And I know, you know, Megan has some additional information about the payments. So she may be able to sprinkle some of that information into our responses up to this point. I think the overarching update today is very consistent with how we begin the calls every month, which is, you know, we're still operating within a pandemic, environment, and the emergency declaration protocols are still in effect, and we're monitoring very closely the federal government's designation of the pandemic health and health declaration and how that applies to the Medicaid program. So we hear everything under the sun and the rumor mill, but until we see it in writing, that's how we're operating, because that's how the program's defined. Environmentally, we're also monitoring the actions of the legislature, and particularly the appropriations process, which seems to be the primary focus here as they try to close out the session, and what those, how that's going to affect the Medicaid program. So that will define starting in a fiscal year of 2024 that starts in coming up in July 1st. It defines the contours of our program as well. So, I think this the last piece is as it relates to the Anthem Medicare Advantage D-SNP product that is branded AmeriVantage. Just wanted to underscore that we are set up so that the provider experience representative that you work with Medicaid may also field quite your questions about our Medicare product, and that's a reliable stop for you to get information about any of the members or your providers that are supporting members that are getting reimbursed through our Medicare product called AmeriVantage, to get any issues resolved. And I'm going to pause there and just double check to see if Danielle, Sheree, Dawn, Jessica, Megan, or Donna have any updates you want to send.
Hi, this is Danielle. I don't have any updates today. Thank you.
Okay, Donna's saying she has no updates as well. And we do have Melody Walters on, who is the director of our physical health department, HCMS director. Should acknowledge that you're here, Melody, and if you wanted to share any updates, you're welcome to do that right now.
Thank you, John. I don't have any updates to share, but I am glad that I was able to join the call today, so thank you.
You bet.
All right. Let's just go into some of these pre-submitted questions here, and then we can start sifting through the chat a little bit, if that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we've talked about the recruitment and retention program, and I know you just now talked about AmeriVantage and how the outreach should go with that with your internal team there. And so the third question that we had submitted ahead of time is about the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan and the expanded benefits to the medically exempt individuals for nursing facility care. And I know I talked about this on the last call, but this is again for our nursing facility individuals. Historically, the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan has been limited to those individuals on Iowa Health and Wellness needing skilled care and being able to receive that in a facility only if they were receiving skilled care. And now I'll call it the expansion of the benefits would now include individuals who are medically exempt, and they would now be eligible for custodial or long-term care in a facility as long as they have that medically exempt status in place. It does not require that you be admitted to the facility skilled to be able to utilize the long-term care benefit for that individual as long as they are medically exempt when they come in. Otherwise, you would likely be at risk for unreimbursed care. As far as my understanding of authorizations go for this program, you would still be required to have an authorization if they are admitted skilled to the facility. And then if they are admitted long-term care with their medically exempt status, my understanding is that you would follow the same process as what you currently do for an individual who is admitted custodial care, which it involves a notification to the MCO of that person entering the facility under long-term care. I guess I'll stop there and see, I guess, one, if that's an accurate representation from Amerigroup's perspective on what I said about Iowa Health and Wellness. And then if you have anything you want to add or correct, I would welcome that.
No, I think you did a good summary, Brandon. You know, it's been something that we've had in place since 2018, where Iowa Health and Wellness members get 120 days in their annual benefit for nursing facility. And as you say, if skilled rehab extends into custodial, then that switches over as long as they're meeting level of care, the nursing facility level of care. Otherwise, I think that description is accurate. And, if there are specific member level questions that providers need to take up, they can work with their provider experience rep. And I'll pause there, see if any of the provider experience team have anything that they want to add. I guess not. Okay.
Sounds good. We will go to the next one, which is home health related. And it's in regards to an info letter that came out in December of last year. I want to say it's IL 2277, which is talking about therapy modifiers, GN, GOGP. This is a home, like I said, a home health agency who was including these for their therapy services and are receiving denials after including these modifiers. Is this applicable, I guess, to home health agencies? And I guess that's the first question. Is it even applicable to them? I am getting the understanding that I don't think that it is, but I just wanted to verify with the group on the call here if it is applicable to that group.
Brandon, this is Dawn Hobson. I think this particular question from our provider that I've been working with. And there has been some confusion on the IL that was put out. I think it was actually put out in November for an effective date of 12-1. It does not. We've since clarified with IME to make sure that we have it correct. It does not pertain to home health claims because they are billed with rev codes versus the procedure code that is actually for the other therapy types. So it would not be something that would pertain. And as I review the IL, it doesn't speak to home health.
Okay, agreed. Yeah, I was looking at the two line of that too, and I didn't see them in there, but wasn't sure when they like define the specialties if there was some kind of applicability there for them. So I guess as a home health agency, if you were applying or including those modifiers on your claims, that is not a requirement for you based on that IL.
Correct. And if you have done so and have received denials, please reach out to your rep and we will assist you, and what the next, for that.
Awesome. Okay. So that's what I've had at least submitted ahead of time. Let's just go into the chat here. And hopefully you guys have been able to maybe take a little bit of a look at some of those that have come in here. This first one's for Peyton, from Peyton. Are your team for outpatient therapy, this is in a hospital, stated that they call Amerigroup yesterday and was told authorization is not required for speech therapy. Is that correct? Is this outlined somewhere so they can provide their UR team with the documentation for future reference?
I did answer this one in the chat. This is Megan. It is required. So if she's seeing that it's not somewhere, I just asked her to send me a screenshot of that. And then also if she was told that on a phone call, if she has the phone call reference number, just so we can provide education.
Hmm. Okay. Thank you, Megan. I probably should look to see if there's some that have been answered while I do this, but.
Brandon, this is Cherie. Can I just follow up to Megan's comments?
Absolutely.
I just remind providers that we do have a tool on our website and any code that anyone's billing, you can check on, the Pluto tool on our website to see if a pre-auth is required for service. So that's always a handy tool whenever it's in question.
Thank you. This from Cindy, are there any updates on the EA4 denials? I'm trying to remember, is EA4 the AmeriVantage denials? I know that's the second part of this question. They're receiving a lot of denials on claims that are processing as Medicare Advantage when they're submitted as Medicaid. Again, I haven't checked to see if it's been answered already, but. Any thoughts on EA4? Denials? It's related to diagnosis, it looks like. Thanks, Cindy.
I'm just scrolling through my notes, Brandon, and I'm not seeing any updates on that issue.
Okay. I know we talked a little bit about the Medicare Advantage, AmeriVantage claims processing issues, and I know you'd mentioned that the reps have received some training on this and should be the point of contact to go to for those. So go past that one. This is a question I think for Danielle, mentioned a while back that inappropriate 252 denials would be paid on sweeps and we didn't have to appeal them. However, not all have paid on sweeps. And when they're trying to appeal them, some have denied now for timely filing. This is again, I think for the other insurance or the Medicare.
Yes, I think this is Danielle, I'm sorry. You have to reach out to your provider rep to make sure that the claims were actually billed correctly. and they, if any timely filing override will need to be done, they would have to review that and obtain their approvals. And just make note to your provider rep that these were older claims that should have been taken care of this week, because once they see the date of the claims, if they're very old, you know what I mean, you're going to get that automatic pushback. So make sure you clearly give your provider rep details about this information.
Thanks, Danielle. This question is, what's the turnaround time for prior auths for SNF care in a nursing facility with AmeriVantage? In some cases, communities have waited many days before reaching back out due to no response. And with the discharge from the hospital, they're wanting to get them out as quickly as they can and into a SNF, if at all possible. And so any comments or thoughts on the turnaround time for an auth on AmeriVantage, knowing that hospitals are trying to discharge them?
Hi, this is Melody, and I don't have that answer right off the top of my head, but I can reach out to my counterpart with AmeriVantage and get an answer back to you, and we'll funnel it through John to get it over.
That would be great. Yeah, I think, you know, that off the turnaround time is one of the questions, but I guess ensuring that they're going to the proper place. So if that person maybe has some additional details on where they should be sending those, or confirmation on where they should be sending those to make sure that they're getting to the right hands, would be helpful, I think.
Definitely. And kind of on the same note, if there's additional questions that you or anyone else on the phone has for AmeriVantage, if you want to kind of funnel those over, we can reach out to those folks as well and try to get some answers back if there's answers that are outstanding or questions that are outstanding that you just haven't had a chance to touch base with AmeriVantage yet.
Thanks, Melody, for that. I would say if you do have questions specific to AmeriVantage, if you could just email them to me, I could then compile and then pass them along to John, who I'm sure could get them to Melody for us.
That sounds like a great process. Okay. And thanks, Melody, for providing that resource.
So this question is, does Amerigroup prior authorization requirements differ from Iowa Total Care? How long is the turnaround time and how soon do you require them to be sent? Okay, so this question is, I'm pretty sure home health related, and it's asking home health off turnaround time, how soon before an expiration of an off do you want the information, and then what supporting documentation is required if they're sending like a plan of care prior to it being signed, I think are the three questions here. I'm not sure if you have anyone from UM on today, John, do you? I know Donna was having some connectivity issues. Yeah.
I think maybe Angela's on.
Hi, it's Jolie. I'm on. And I'm sorry, I missed part of the question. Is it, what's the turnaround time for the skilled nursing requests?
So this is home health. I'm not sure if that matters or not, but home health, what is the turnaround time for those auths? Because I think what this provider is trying to do is create like themselves a timeline of how soon they need to be getting information in to be able to receive the approved auth prior to providing the care, prior to providing non-authorized care, I guess, I think is what they're trying to do. And so I guess just an estimate on turnaround time, and then how soon prior to an auth expiring should they be getting a new auth to Amerigroup?
Well, the turnaround time could be up to 14 days for the standard request. So I would say that I don't know how soon to tell you to submit it prior to the end of your last one, but I would say within a couple weeks of the end date of your last request that you would want to get it sent in so we did not have any missed dates of service.
And then for, I know we're getting kind of technical here. If they're submitting a plan of care 14 or so days prior to the completion of the current plan of care, it's likely unsigned by a physician. And so that's okay. Is there any other supplemental documentation that is needed, like nurse's notes or anything like that to aid in the approval, or how what does Amerigroup, what would you guys like?
No, typically the plan of care should be enough information. If there was like a PRN visit or something has changed that you had some different orders, you would want to include that as well, any of that information. But otherwise, you should be able to submit it with the prior authorization form and the plan of care.
Awesome. Thank you. I think I might have skipped a question, so I'm going to go back to one here. This is, again, regarding AmeriVantage. I know Melody talked about this and so did John a little bit ago, but it's regarding, it's home health, and they're submitting claims for their Medicaid individuals, and they're billed with the Z code saying that they're not homebound, basically. And then those are still being denied through the AmeriVantage plan, and then they can't get them to reprocess properly. Any thoughts or comments on what home health can do? I mean, they have the code that indicates that it's not an approved service by Medicare and likely not AmeriVantage either. And so any thoughts, I suppose, on that?
I'm not sure if one of our provider experience folks on the phone has an answer for that. This is Melody, but to clear up the question, from my understanding, is that we have a member who is, they're dually eligible with AmeriVantage as Medicare and Amerigroup as Medicaid. And so Medicare, it's not going to be a covered home health benefit under the Medicare side, but the claims are denying on the Medicaid side for Medicare. Is that what is happening?
Yeah, I feel like they're flowing through the AmeriVantage plan still and denying.
Okay. Do you know, are the claims being submitted directly to Amerigroup, or are they being to AmeriVantage?
Yeah, I would say yes, they'd be submitted to Amerigroup. And Dawn, you can correct me in the chat if I'm misrepresenting either of those questions.
Nope, you're right.
Okay, thanks, Dawn.
Okay. If we don't have anyone on the phone with any insight in this, Danielle. Do you? If not, it may be something that we have a takeaway and research and get back.
Yeah, it may be a matter of providing some claims level examples to Danielle for her to research and get back.
Thank you both. This next one is code S5125 submitted through EVV. Paying at a rate less than the published rate, which is the S5125 max rate is 554, which is the same as what their CDEC agreement reads. Multiple claims have been reconsidered, including the CDEC agreement with the rate, and it's upheld as paid per agreement. Is this code rate incorrect payment a known issue and being worked as a project by chance?
So for that one, the rep is Shannon, and she's been working with this provider on that specifically, and she has updates for her. I think they have a meeting scheduled for tomorrow.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you.
I think to summarize it, it is not a known issue. or a global issue, if you will.
Okay. Awesome. And again, I apologize if I'm asking questions that have answers further on in the chat, since I'm kind of going through these live. So just let me know if I am. This is a question from Angie asking about an EOB recouping funds from 3 years ago, stating that there was no auth on file for their first 5 visits. They tried to dispute, saying the first 5 do not require auth. However, they were unable to on availability because you can't access claims older than 2 years. What would be the best next steps for that kind of situation?
Danielle, so I guess they're saying the claim was recouped, saying there was no authorization. What they should do first is reach out to the representative to make sure there was an auth on file. And if there is an auth on file, there's 2 things. Was this recoupment a normal recoupment, claims adjustment, or was it taken from cost containment? If this recoupment was from cost containment, then after they verified that there was a valid auth on file, they must contact cost containment for the recoupment. If it was not, then you can work with your provider rep to have these claims adjusted.
And then I guess as a follow-up to that, and correct me if I'm my interpretation of the 5 visits is inaccurate, but you can provide the 5 visits without an authorization, but when you go request the authorization after the 5 are completed, that is when you would include the first 5. Am I thinking of that right, or am I completely wrong there?
But isn't it first 5 visits per episode, I believe, and my clinical people can confirm?
I'm not sure.
Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you.
It's not every restart time. It's a new start of care.
Yes.
Like a brand new.
So it is a brand new start. So if they had that care with another provider and then they transfer over, are they granted okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Am I right though in the thought that you get your 5 visits at the start of care. But then are you supposed to include those when you submit your authorization on like starting off 6, but you know, if you do it for, say you need 30, you would make it for 35 to include the first 5? Or am I making that up?
Right. And there's a provider update that went out about that quite a year or two ago. We could send again.
Okay. I don't think it would hurt, honestly, to just educate possibly.
Yeah. Or any new people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. That's true too, for sure. Okay. Thank you both. This is another question on AmeriVantage, and they'd mentioned that there was potentially an IT fix that I'm not remembering that was going to go into place 4/16 of 22. Is that, I guess, still a thing? John, do you know?
The 4/16 date is still in effect. As far as I know, I've not seen any updates to that or change to that that fixed date.
Okay, awesome. All right. I'm reading that. Question here. This provider finished an audit, an AmeriGroup Cotivity audit at the end of November. The audit's still open with the auditor stating I can't close the review just yet. And I'm awaiting a response from AmeriGroup on tag requests for claims. We need these in order to be able to take back overpayments on specific claims. Any suggestions on who to contact to get the audit closed? Why should providers spend the time to do the audits if AmeriGroup isn't going to respond with the required text to close the audit? So I don't know if this is a communication between Cotivity and Amerigroup that's possibly making this audit stay open. Do you have any thoughts on that? I'm not even honestly sure entirely what TAG is. So this is the first I've heard that referenced.
I mean, this is Danielle. All I can say is, you know, the provider should reach out to their representative. And if the representative needs to steer that provider or forward that information to someone else, it will be done. But I guess they just need more detail to see exactly what the provider is talking about.
And thanks, Danielle. And I do see that John included the provider contact us link underneath that question. And I see that the two questions after that is asking how do we find out who our rep is. And so I would reference Amy to that link there. And I see Megan also tagged her as well. So I appreciate that. Some follow-up questions. More comments about issues with the MeriVantage and prior auth issues with the new plan. And so I think, you know, kind of what we'd said earlier, John, is if there are specific questions related to a MeriVantage that you're seeking an answer on, maybe just email those to me and we can pass them along to John and Melody and see what kind of answers we can get regarding the plan.
Sure. And Melody had a great suggestion after that exchange, and I'll do some outreach to their UM team, Melody's counterpart on the MeriVantage side of it, and try to get a representative to attend these regular meetings. It does seem that there is a steady increase in questions about our MeriVantage product from your providers, Brandon. So I'll work on that between now and the next meeting.
Okay, that'd be great. And then I do see additional questions about the first five visits and clarification, I think probably based on what I said about including those in your next auth request. So I'm not sure. I don't remember who was on the phone. Is that you, Donna?
It was Angela.
Oh, Angela. Sorry, Angela.
No problem.
I'll see if I can find that notice that went out. I know exactly the notice that you're talking about, and it has been mm-hmm. a few years now since that came, but I'll see if I can track it down at some point.
I will too. I know I have it saved. So, and if they ever have questions specifically about something, they can always call and talk to Jolie and myself. We're happy to guide them on that.
Okay. No, that's appreciated. Okay. I will pause here. Oh. I might have just received it in my email.
Hey, Brandon, it's Julie. Do we know if the denial of the first five visits is a known issue? It looks like we have four or five folks pretty much in a row here who are having issues with that. It sounds like we may have a bigger issue than one-off. Danielle or John, do you know if it's a known issue?
I guess I would defer to Danielle on that one, that she would have a direct line of sight. It is not something that has, risen to the surface that I've detected up to this point.
And this is Danielle. I have not heard, not saying it's not issue, but I have not heard, from a number of providers to know that it's a known issue.
Okay.
you know, I mean, I see now in the chat that people are bringing it up, but it was not brought to my attention until today.
Is that something you could look into? It looks like maybe we may have a bigger issue then.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. I am not seeing any more questions in the chat at this point. I guess while I'm wrapping up, we'll see. Just want to, again, thank all of our members for joining us again this month. Again, same time next month, second Wednesday, 10:30 to 12:30 for both of our MCO partners. Shout out to Amerigroup and the team for joining us again and answering some of our questions. So we appreciate that. And then a final shout out to Right Dose Pharmacy, a sponsor for our MCO calls for the entire 2022 year. So shout out to them, appreciate their partnership and thanks for all that they do with the association. And again, thanks everyone for joining us today. We appreciate it. Have a good rest of your week.
Thanks, Brandon and team. Have a great week.
Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.
Have a great day.